The topic of this rector's conference is the gift of self, the essence of pastoral charity. And I'm lifting that out of the Ratio Fundamentalis, as I mentioned in an email at the end of the year. After the Second Vatican Council, there were a number of those documents that were calling for implementation. So the decree on priestly formation, one of the documents of Vatican II, in order to implement that document, there was from the Holy See what's called the Ratio Fundamentalis, which I would call like the universal PPF. That document, with some revisions, really hasn't been touched. It came out in the early 1970s. And so Pope Benedict was calling for its revision, and Pope Francis carried it through. And certainly with the developments of Pastoris Dabovobis, which is the major development since the Second Vatican Council, this Ratio Fundamentalis now captures all of those developments. It's a good document, but interesting, right from the very beginning of the document, it speaks about seminarians from the diocesan context as missionary priests for the new evangelization. Well, that on our website, and that's the framework of our formation program. So I'm very grateful that the Holy Father once again turned to New Orleans to get some direction. In any case, right from the outset, the gift of self for the purpose of pastoral charity really does summarize what seminary formation is to be. So I'm going to start off with the opening prayer of this past week. So as we moved into ordinary time, the mind of the church, what would be the prayer as we enter into Mass? What would be that prayer of the church in the first week of ordinary time, as we will pray again at Mass this morning? O Lord, we pray that they may see what must be done and gain strength to do what they have seen. That they may see what must be done. Liturgically, we have just celebrated a robust season through the Advent season. What we see in the Immaculate Conception, what we see year after year in the Christmas celebration, what we see in the slaughter of the Holy Innocents, what we see in the Feast of the Holy Family, what we see in Mary, Mother of God and Mother of the Church, what we see in the Epiphany, what we see in the baptism of the Lord, are not just commemorations, as we know. It's a way in which God's liturgy draws us into those events. And so when the church, as we come out of that season, the very first week that the church would lift up in prayer, that they may see what must be done, not just as a, certainly as a church, not just as a community, that each one of you, aha, this is what must be done. I have seen this, and right now in 2016-17, I know what must be done. But then the second part of that prayer, to gain strength to do what they've seen. I don't know about you, but I think often because we're a house of discernment and because of our spirituality as Catholics, we're always discerning. And I think in some ways, for the most part, we know what must be done. But do we have the strength to do what we've seen? For me, that's probably the greater part of that prayer. I know what must be done. At 48, 21 years ordained, my fifth year as rector, I think I know what must be done, Lord. You've taught me this. But do I have the strength to do it? You know what must be done as a brand new seminary, as a man who's about to be ordained a priest or a deacon. You know what must be done. Do you have the strength to actually do it? So that's been the prayer of this whole week at the beginning of Mass, that you've been able to see what must be done, and secondly, to have the strength to actually do it. Again, as we started Tuesday with this first week of ordinary time, Monday was baptism of the Lord, one might again, what would be the first gospel that the church would want us to hear coming out of these feasts? The very first gospel an ordinary time at Mass, what would the church want us to hear? And we heard it on Tuesday, and I'll proclaim it again. Jesus came to Capernaum with his followers, and on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and taught. The people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. In their synagogue was a man with an unclean spirit who cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." Jesus rebuked him and said, "Quiet, come out of him." And the unclean spirit convulsed him, and with a loud cry came out of him. Have you come to destroy us? Yep. I've come to destroy anything that doesn't belong to me. Capitulation. I came to destroy sin. I came to destroy evil. I came to destroy anything that's unclean, because in God's beatitude, none of this exists. Behold, I make all things new. I came that you might have life and have it to the full. Interesting, however, the unclean spirit, "I know who you are." The opening prayer, we pray for that strength to see what must be done, then to have the strength to actually do it. The unclean spirit, "I know who you are," had the knowledge that was sufficient, maybe to even make the act of faith. "Have you come to destroy us?" "Yes, I have. I came to destroy anything that does not belong to God's creation." God does not come to destroy us. "No, I came that you might have life completely. I will destroy anything that doesn't belong in you that belongs to me." And so for the Christian, those are hopeful words, that when we open our hearts and minds up to conversion and to purity, there is going to be a destruction. And maybe there's a certain sadness in the beginning because we don't want to let go of our sin. We don't want to let go of that routine that we think feeds us, that we think gives us life, that we think that gives us meaning and purpose. My goodness, that's the culture all around us. Self-serving and self-seeking, even redefining in human nature what belongs to God and what doesn't. "No, I came to destroy it all, only to save what belongs to him." And so we walk with him. In that gospel, Jesus enters into this situation, as we heard, accompanied with followers. Accompanied with followers. What we can learn, just in a very simple way, is that Jesus chooses to destroy, to recreate, in the company of what would be the early church. So therefore, while faith and your vocation is personal, and your act of faith is personal, the exercise of this plan is not. It's communal. Discipleship is communal. It's with him. What I would call from my last rector's conference about the millennial sin, I think part two to that millennial sin is when we might even try to adopt a spirituality that says, how does Jesus accompany me? I'm on a journey. I am discerning. I am on this path. I'm calling it a millennial sin. No. Jesus is the one walking. Jesus is the one recreating. Jesus is the shepherd. We're following him. And so maybe we can get caught up in ourselves that if we're going to be total gift to other, we must first be total gift to him. And so I would challenge all of us to purify ourselves of this millennial sin that might help us thinking, I am on a journey, especially for those of you who are at the beginning of your discernment. I'm on this journey, and I'm trying to see where Jesus is at. Already we're off to the wrong start. Peter, get behind me. He was rebuked, trying to get ahead of himself. as if Jesus is going to follow him. Get behind me. You're going to follow me. And so how might the Lord be saying that to us in our discernment? While we put ourselves at the center of a formation program where you're developing a role of life for you, where obviously you're at the center of how you're establishing yourself in the formation program, and the PPF says you are the chief protagonist, not the academic dean, not your spiritual director, not the rector, not the bishop. You are the chief protagonist. And so the seminarian tries to say, well, why isn't this program helping me? You're the one that's supposed to be leading the charge here. But not in a way that then tries to say, well, I don't see Jesus. I can't hear him. And therefore, as I'm on this journey, and I can't hear him or see him, and that then maybe influences your discernment, if you follow your own voice, you'll follow right out the front door. But when Jesus is walking in, as we heard in the gospel every day this week, I'm walking into this moment of leprosy, I'm walking into this family, the mother-in-law with a fever, I'm walking into demons, accompanied by these disciples who are following him right into these situations. It wasn't the other way around. And so a part of our discernment as we start 2017 then is, therefore, what does that discipleship even look like at Notre Dame Seminary? While you followed him right through the front doors of this seminary to come here, and you keep following him, some of you are inches away from priesthood, not very far away from priesthood. You're following him through all of this. But as we move, for those of you who are at the earlier stages of formation, don't lose sight of that ever, that you're following him. And the moment that we lose sight of that, we'll get lost, get confused, overwhelmed, anxious, tired, and that leads to the ultimate confusion. Now, interesting, as I was reading through the Ratio Fundamentalis, one of the newer elements of the document towards the beginning is what they would call three stages of formation. They're using this as benchmarks, very clear. Discipleship, and I'm going to use that with a small d. They don't use that because I obviously think discipleship is a lifelong responsibility of all Christians. But they're using it in a very intentional way, which I'll address in a moment. But discipleship is the first stage of formation at a seminary. Configuration is the second stage at the seminary. And pastoral is the third stage. And what the document is asking us to discern together, really, what stage are you at? So discipleship, using that in the classical sense of a student being taught. So a seminarian comes into the seminary, small d disciple. Lord, I don't have all the answers. So in order for me to answer the question, are you calling me to become a priest? I first must need to be taught docility. And while all of us brings accomplishments and our own charisms and gifts, our own experience, that's as the ratio wants us to start with. I need to be taught. Now, that being taught is a lifelong lesson. But when do we reach a point, and on this Sunday, of course, our T4 men are going to take the oath of fidelity, profession of faith in a couple weeks, our T3 men, and while each of you are expected to be at different stages, at a certain point the document says, when do we move from discipleship to configuration? When do you see the priestly formation program? And of course, this completely is in conjunction with what you believe it with confidence. God is calling me to become a priest. And when you articulate that to your spiritual director, to your advisor, to the rector, to your bishop, at that moment, Lord, you've taught me all that I need to know at this point, knowing that discipleship is lifelong. From here on out, everything in seminary formation is preparing me to configure my heart and mind to Christ the Good Shepherd, Alter Christus. What the ratio is asking is, can you point to that? It might not be so specific as last Thursday, but when can you reach that point? And you ought to be able to articulate that. The fall of this, the retreat coming out of that, coming out of the summer. At that moment, I have addressed seminary formation as a moment of configuration, conforming my heart and my mind to the priest, the ordained priesthood of Jesus, being formed into shepherd servant. The third, then, very clear, as the ratio is asking, that you can pinpoint in your formation what would be the final stage of seminary formation that it's calling the pastoral stage. The document recognizes, as Pastor Stavovobis does, that each of you have come from an existing community, from your family, from your neighborhood, from your diocese, but you're supposed to go back into it, not as aliens, not as foreigners, that the goal of seminary was not to remove you in a way that all of this formation, all of this theology, philosophy, liturgical experience has somehow created the opposite, where you go back, I'm unfamiliar with all of this. I don't know what it means to work with poor people, young people, people in hospitals. This is unfamiliar to me. What I will say, that's not the seminary's fault. We're not perfect here, no seminary is, but that's not the type of seminary that we have structured here. So when have you reached a point of familiarity, maybe not with the exact pastoral situations, but a familiarity with yourself, that when Jesus, accompanied by disciples, walks into a moment of leprosy, demons, fevers, blind people, crippled people, prostitutes, as he walks right into them, he knows what he's giving, total gift of self. And he's expecting that these disciples soon are going to be able to do the exact same thing. That for the 3 years that they followed him wasn't a journey that made them even less familiar with these situations. So when he tells Peter, "Dulc in altum," I want you now to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into that lake to catch souls, that I didn't prepare you for mediocrity. So when have you reached, when will you reach, have you reached that pastoral stage, that final stage of formation, that my human formation, my spiritual formation, my intellectual formation has reached this point now as a sinner, imperfect, with gifts that I don't have, that I can accompany Jesus to do this. So those three stages that the ratio is identifying for us might be something within your own discernment as we move into the year 2017. As I mentioned, this whole pursuit is not done alone. That the communitarian dimension of your discernment from the outset for your own personal sanctity is not lost in your individual embracement of priestly formation. Ultimately, for diocesan priests particularly, it's obviously religious, that your first family is the presbyterate. Again, the Ratio Fundamentalis says that after 4 to 6 to 8 years of formation, and while it's not going to be the same community that you traveled with, that you've adopted a spirituality that your first family, which you might not be spending all that much time with, practically speaking throughout the year, is your presbyterate. That goal is only established by the way in which you've heard me say very often here of how you treated your experience in the seminary. And it's not easy at first. Not choosing to live with the men that you live with. But do you have in your heart that this community is your first family now? Not permanent. You're not called to be a seminarian forever. But in this moment in your life, as the church is asking you to fully immerse yourself, that this parish, that these men, that your brothers right here, this is my family for now. And how far are you willing to go to open yourselves? And that takes a risk. to these brothers of yours in a way that risk repeated semester after semester after semester will prepare you well enough to enter into a presbyterate that's waiting for you, that you love, that you're loyal to, with a bishop who has the shepherd. Because from that springboard and that accompaniment, as the disciples got to know each other and love one another as men, so that when they were sent out to carry out the apostolic ministry, they were doing so as a community, even if it was as an individual pursuit. No wonder St. Paul, as he was called, and in the beginning of his apostolic ministry, as we see in the letter to the Romans, and while he's carrying out ministry in a sense on his own, he realized at a certain point, I have to meet Peter. It took him 3 years to prepare himself to make an account and to be confirmed by the church in this apostolic community that was represented by Peter. So I, again, want to reiterate your loyalty and your commitment to seminary formation. Secondly, the gift of self, which is the goal of priestly formation, presumes and understands two things. Number one, that you are a mystery to yourself. The church understands that seminarians are mysteries unto themselves. And I can confirm that very well. Why would he do that? The mystery is because charisms are supernatural. Gifts are supernatural. For those of you who are called to priesthood, it's supernatural. Celibacy is supernatural. Obedience is supernatural. Committing yourself to lifelong prayer, the presbyteral prayer of the church, is supernatural. So there is something mysterious, not inaccessible. There's something mysterious in yourself and molded by grace and integrating that mystery in a very healthy, natural way is what is unfolding in your formation. The second element, however, is the limitations and the frailty that goes with human nature. So when we gaze upon the mystery of what happens on Golgotha, we see frailty, death, sin, not Jesus's, paralleled with celibacy, obedience, a love of the Father, caught up in the resurrection. So your own limitations, your own sin, and your own frailty that you're carrying with you until the end of time is integrated with talents and gifts and supernatural qualities that are supposed to be integrated in a healthy way that the PPS says should, quote, avoid fragmentation, polarization, superficiality, excesses, or partiality. That means that the mystery may be there, the charisms are there, the gifts are there, your celibacy and obedience are there and they're healthy, but somehow not being integrated with the frailty and the limitations that are in human nature. That's the priest who's a technician, maybe an excellent preacher, celebrates the Mass with reverence and holiness, as exquisite in preaching, but doesn't know how to be a pastor. Pastoral charity, as I indicated at the beginning, is the goal of yourself. Something went wrong if these dimensions were not integrated. The seminarian, the priest, ultimately is called to move out of himself in two directions, to the Father and to the people. That formation should allow us, in this accompaniment, as Jesus is always pointing us to the Father, that we can move out of our selfishness, out of our pride, out of our self-preference. That was the sin of Adam and Eve. They preferred themselves and their appetites over to God. That we can move outside of that, moving heavenward, as Pope Benedict XVI, the Eros, that the priest is always pointing to heavenly love, while at the same time moving out of himself into the midst of God's people. Again, only in the crucified and resurrected Jesus can we ever find this possible? We can't do that on our own. There's no medicine, there's no technology, there is no science, there is no education. There's nothing that we can do to accomplish that except in Christ. And so, the integration of the gift with the sin has to be achieved. As I noted, what the seminary does not want to accomplish is taking a seminarian from the Christian community and after several years sending him back and he doesn't know how to enter into it. And so I would ask that in your conversations and prayer and your conversations with your advisor and your spiritual director to be very honest about what is unfamiliar in God's flock. That may always be somewhat unfamiliar, but would never be a hindrance, an obstacle for those people to experience Jesus in your priesthood. And so, and of course, that discernment continues from age to assignment, where you rediscover new opportunities and possibilities, and you rediscover new limitations and frailty that you are unaware of. The first quality that the Ratio Fundamentalis describes as a characteristic that Christ had was his singular closeness with both God and both with humanity. The priesthood that you are preparing for is not a priesthood of observation. And so I often will say to the faculty, we're not running an observation program, we're running a formation program. So we're not preparing priests who are watching Jesus' priesthood. We're preparing priests who are missionary, who live Jesus' priesthood in a way that is holy, innocent, and undefiled, and yet often with loud cries and loud tears, so that we can deal patiently with our own weaknesses and the weaknesses of God's people. That really is the description of a good shepherd. So in conclusion, as we start this year 2017, I would ask us again to discern with generous hearts your capacity to totally give yourself away to Jesus, if you're called to be a priest. Can you do that? What do you need to do to let go so that you can be total gift to him? And even if you're not called to be a priest, if you do that in the seminary, to totally let go and give yourself as a gift to the church at Notre Dame Seminary. And if you're not called to priesthood, God will reward you with very clear insight. The seminarian who is not totally giving of himself and in the absence of total gift realizes that I'm not living the expectations of seminary life, then uses that as part of your discernment. Therefore, I'm not called to be a priest. No, you never were called to be a seminarian. You did not give of yourself 100%. And decisions get made either by the seminarian, sometimes who reaches a point that he has to leave, not because he had good discernment. He left because he never embraced what this program was offering to him, and the confusion still exists. Or worst case scenario, the church has to discern that. You did not give of yourself 100%.